Broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Learning Insights, featuring learning professionals improving performance to drive business results.
Welcome to another exciting and informative edition of Learning Insights, brought to you by our friends over at Training Pros. This is your host, Stone Payton. This is going to be a fun episode. It is my distinct pleasure to introduce a lady from Exide Technologies. She's VP of Talent Management. Please welcome to the show, Andrea Lawson. Welcome to the show.
Well, good morning.
Well, we are delighted to have you. So what's a grand poobah of talent management do for a company like Exide Technologies? What's the role?
So talent management at Exide is really about putting the right people with the right skills in the right jobs at the right time. And so for us, that means critical processes like talent reviews and talent succession reviews, identifying and understanding who our top talent really is and understanding how they're doing, performance management, learning and development, rewards and recognition. Ultimately, it's about how do we attract, develop, and retain the right talent for Exide strategy.
Now, what does Exide do?
So we are a battery and power storage company. So regardless of how you make the power, you need to store it. So we kind of firmly believe batteries are here to stay.
You think that they're not gonna go away?
It might look different over time, but there's always going to be a need to store the power you generate.
Right.
So that's the world we live in. We're a global company, about 50% US and 50% outside, mainly in Europe. About 11,000 employees.
And you're a manufacturer?
We're a manufacturer, yeah.
So there's a sales arm and a manufacturing arm?
Correct, there is. And we don't manufacture over in Asia. We manufacture in the U.S. and in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And we manufacture both plastics and also the battery products themselves. And we also have a recycling component to the organization
where
we recycle lead to actually build and create the lead-acid batteries. So it's a fairly nasty process when you're dealing with sulfuric acid and molten lead. So we live in a world of environmental health and safety as well.
So how did you fall into this line of work, the talent management arena? What's the backstory on that?
That's a great question. Wow, you've done this before. So my passion is really around seeing people develop and grow. So my background in the generalist world of HR led me into things like payroll and hiring and firing and stuff like that. And I found my passion was in seeing people grow and develop. And so about 20 years ago now, I specialized in the what you would call the learning part and the learning development part of HR. That in these recent years has expanded into more of what we call now talent management. So how you integrate together those critical processes, like how you attract and recruit, develop and ultimately retain. So I fell into it because I had a passion for working with people and really led me to an HR career. And that's taken me through everything, a number of places from hospitality to financial services to manufacturing and consumer products. And now I find myself back in manufacturing.
Now, is talent management different when you're dealing with manufacturing as opposed to sales or as opposed to hospitality, or is it just kind of similar core, and then it's different, obviously, for the specifics of the talent you're managing?
Mm. No, I think that's a good question. The core is the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the key process is to do the things I've just mentioned. You need whatever market or industry you're in. The workforce looks different. So when we look at a manufacturing environment, we're connecting with and dealing with the dynamics of blue collar and white collar, which we don't see in, for example, in a financial services environment.
Sure.
So the mix of the workforce makes a difference, and the nature of what we either build, sell, or do does make some difference. But inherently, the core is the core. It's a pretty transferable set of skills to multiple industries.
So how do you know what kind of talent you're going after? Do you get some kind of direction from an individual hiring manager, or the executive team says we need to hire talent in these certain pools? Or
you know, it comes in a couple of ways. The thing that I'm particularly passionate about is how do we develop the right processes, frameworks, programming to deliver on the company strategy? So rather than HR being in a room deciding how to run HR, it's about working with our leadership team and our CEO to understand the strategy and then building that into the processes we have to decide, you know, what are we going to need now, next year, and potentially in the future. So into, for example, our talent review process, our organizational review process, I should say, we analyze the key positions in the company. both what they are today, and those are strategically critical positions that if they were either vacant or someone got proverbially hit by the bus, that would leave us exposed, then we take time to really carefully plan where's the succession behind that and in that position. So we do that not only for the roles today in today's strategy, but also as we look into the future and think about jobs that may not exist today, but we know will be critical as we get into years 2, 3, or 4 of a plan. And where are we going to find that talent? Are there new capabilities that we need to build in the organization? And how are we going to be able to ensure the supply in the future? So there's a strategically led component. And then, of course, there is the more day-to-day management of filling of jobs. But it's ultimately led by what's the bigger plan.
So when you have this kind of bigger plan and the vision and you're looking towards the future, a portion of your time is spent kind of building your bench and making sure that there's people that you can kind of eventually lead up to leadership roles.
Correct.
And then are you also keeping your eye open on like kind of superstars and other and maybe competitors or in other industries that you're thinking that maybe we can get that talent in here?
Yeah, that's another very good question. So, yes.
So, he has a great question. I have a good question and a very good question.
Well, you're trying to go from good to great.
I'm trying. Started at great. That's, yeah.
I'll help you get there, Lee, by the end of the show.
Because that's part of your skill set.
I am indeed a coach. So, yeah, you're quite right. The first thing that you mentioned, yes, we're obsessing about who's the top talent in our organization, what's their succession plan, you know, what's their next assignment, and how are we working with them to develop them for that. We find that subject matter expertise is generally not the gap. To your point, it's generally leadership.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of the work that we do focuses on how do we develop the leadership skills of leaders to be able to take successively more strategic or successively more central core roles for the organization. And that's clearly ongoing. And sometimes that's very individual, you know, very individual coaching or 360s or individual assignments to different training programs. And sometimes that's coming together collectively. We actually segment our leadership development in two ways, into two buckets, one by position and one by potential.
Mm-hmm.
So we say, how do we approach our high potential population and what's the response to them? How do we accelerate their readiness? And then from a position perspective, a different approach, which is what is the baseline level of skill or education or learning or level of competency that we need to develop in our leaders in general? Position and potential-based look at how we segment our investment, which is obviously money and time.
Sure.
When it comes to the second part of your point around do we have our eye on competitors, yes. That tends to be at a very functional level. As we think about key positions in the company, we're very aware of who our peers and competitors are in like industries. Lead acid batteries is a very specific niche area, and important to know who's in this world in other companies.
And who's doing what.
And who's doing what. So yes, we have ways of staying in tune with those people, and personal networks come into play a lot within that.
And you're doing all of this on a global stage. That has to present some unique challenges with different cultures and time zones. Mm-hmm. Speak to that a little bit, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. It's part of the reason I took this assignment at Exide was to continue that global component. It does bring a lot of exciting opportunity as well as challenges. The practical one you just mentioned there around time is not to be overlooked. In fact, an example, just last week we held our annual talent review HR calibration session on video conference at 6 a.m. Eastern.
Oh, my.
For 7 hours.
Wow.
Yay.
I'm not lying. I felt for my colleague sitting in Shanghai.
What time
who was
it there?
Finishing at 1 a.m. So Europe had it easy. They started at lunchtime and went through to 6 p.m. or 7 p.m. So there are practical considerations, and there's ways around that. And the example of the video conference is something we look to do more and more of. We made the choice not to fly everyone into a room to have a conversation.
That's how they would have done it previously,
that
right?
That was our original plan. We knew we wanted a cohesive conversation across our HR leadership team to calibrate, in our first ever organizational review, what we were seeing before we present to the CEO on the 1st of February. So Then we said, okay, well, let's think about that. What would that cost? I mean, we don't need to get into the numbers, but that would be considerable.
Right.
Versus getting up a little bit early, a little bit bleary-eyed, and ordering some coffee and donuts. So the practical things are a consideration. I think that the other things that strike me, I think coming a pretty unique background in that I've sat in Europe as the European region of a global company, feeling like I'm not being collaborated with, and I am receiving and being told.
Right, like you're literally on an island.
It's been developed centrally by corporate. There it is. Right, there you go. Make it work in Europe. And of course, Europe, unlike saying the US, Europe is a pretty diverse region. And I think we're operating in something like 40 countries right now. So culturally, there are challenges. It's important to have feet on the ground in the region that can talk about how would this translate, sometimes literally and sometimes in terms of sort of philosophically, how would this work or resonate. Having now moved to the US with that background, I think I'm acutely aware of making sure that my European and outside US colleagues don't feel like it's a push.
Right.
So back to the question, it brings a lot to the point of relationships and collaboration and conversation. I was saying to Cheryl just before the show that it's easy when I sit in the US to be pulled into the Americas region. And so it's a very active role to make sure that I'm sort of equitably managing and supporting the region. So a lot of relationship building. And I think some flexibility is the last thing I would say on that, in that what are the processes or programs or things, to be really technical about it, the things that we truly believe we have to be 100% aligned on, that everyone has to do the same. What are they? And then outside of that, what are the things where, you know, if it needs to be done slightly differently in Poland or in a particular region.
Right, you can live with that.
Then we can live with that. Right. So I think rather than falling on the sword and saying this is a
corporate
process.
This is the only way we do this,
exactly.
Right.
It's about being open to
right.
And having
you
got to
be flexible enough.
Exactly.
So I think you mentioned potential or even high potential earlier in the conversation. Do you guys have a formal high potential development program at Exide?
You know, at Exide, that's emerging. And we will know for the first time who our officially recognized high potentials are out of this organizational review at the end of this month.
Oh, cool.
So we do already have in place a plan to implement an accelerated leadership experience for those high potentials. We're actually working with the Ken Blanchard companies and Situational Leadership too. And their redesign, which is sort of a bit of early airtime for those guys.
Yeah, we'll have to bill Ken for that.
You'll totally
we're
have
buddies,
to bill
he'll
Ken
understand.
Pat Zagami, the author of one of the co-authors of Leadership Situational Leadership 2, is working with us and our high potentials in April, and April through June, and then ongoing in terms of some sustainability tools. So we've got a pretty clear plan for high potentials this time out. And that will evolve over time. In my previous lives, that has certainly been a very well thought through plan and approach. At Newell Rubmaid, we developed a top talent program called Aspire, which is a 12-month program for our C-suite and presidential successors.
Was that internally developed?
That was in partnership, in fact, with Pat and the Ken Blanchard companies. And it wasn't Situational Leadership 2, but it was a consulting partnership. Mm-hmm. And it was an entirely bespoke development program for those really critical top talent.
When you go outside like that and have a partnership like that, how does that... Like, how do you vet which ones you're going to pick? And then you chose Ken Blanchard, obviously.
We're talking about vendors.
Right.
You know, I think that there's a couple of things. One, for me, there is how well does the organization truly want to get to know you and your business? Mm-hmm. And Pat and the Ken Blanchard guys had got to know us over time, a number of years. There's also a level of flexibility. So I am, at my heart, an instructional designer and a facilitator and a leader in those environments. So working with someone that is prepared to partner with their customer as opposed to develop something and come in and deliver it. So it was very much a collaboration. So looking for the right fit of that relationship
was it hard
was
to
key.
Find?
That wasn't hard to find. That was actually quite a natural one for us because the company had been working with us over time.
Right.
And the added value of what they'd learned already about our business and our challenges and our strategy was worth an incredible amount when it came to then being in a room with our top talent and talking about how to be more effective in that environment.
Well, and I'm sure it was incredibly helpful having come from the other side of this in an earlier life, working with a potential client that has a pretty good handle on what they think they want.
Yes.
I mean, that could save a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of heartache, right?
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, I spent about 5 or 6 years myself in the consulting world, and always in HR learning and development. And so I got pretty smart about the things they ask and do and how they operate, and all this notion of billable time. So maybe I got a bit smart also about how to partner with people that are a bit like me.
I get the idea that you are particularly blessed, your team is particularly blessed with a good relationship, a good working relationship with the lines of business or the C-suite. And I don't think that's always the case, or at least a good communication. Can you talk a little bit about how that works at Exide, or maybe even more importantly, how do you create that dynamic where you get the kind of airtime and communication opportunity that you need with the lines of business, with the folks that can pull the trigger and control the purse strings on some of these things?
That's a great question.
What is the deal?
Winning.
That's ding, ding for you. It is a great question. And I think probably one that all of our entire HR community wrestles with constantly. You know, how do you have a seat at the table? How do you make sure you're in the right conversations? And I think there's a couple of components to that. I think there's one, which is you've got to know the business. You know, you can't have conversations with people about their people and about their organization if you don't understand the dynamics of what we do and the challenges that we face. So you've got to know the business. So invest time in doing that. That means getting into the businesses, walk the plants. I've done enough walks around lead acid battery plants to give me a sense of that toxic, nasty process. But, you know, you've got to know what we do. And you've also got to know and understand the market that you play in, and therefore the challenges that your business is facing. I think that for me, in doing that, you get a much better window into how to pace and the timing around how to pull these different levers that we can to create a stronger sort of people and talent organization. And by that, I mean there's only so much the business can take. So you've got to recognize where they are as opposed to where you want them to be. And my boss, Carla Cheney, call out for Carla, is very good at bringing us back to where are we today? Where are we now? Not where we hope to be. Now, we've got to know where we hope to be, but we've got to always ground our choices and conversations in knowing today. So I think know the business. I think then there's a question of, you know, you've got to show the value. It can't be a process or a step for the sake of a process. So, for example, when we introduced the talent review process most recently, that was an incremental process for our business. Lots of other things like performance management was already happening. This was entirely incremental. So how do you get people to understand the value of having conversations today about talent that might be ready in 5 years' time? And so helping people understand the risk associated to their business of not having a clear sense of the pipeline. So have people understand the business case. And of course, clearly, and not to underestimate, it's got to be pragmatic and realistic. You know, you can't create, as an HR professional, a laborious, labor-intensive, complex process that needs to be overlaid against another 1,500 initiatives. So create something that's practical, simple, but does what it needs to do, and then partner with the business to make that happen. You know, pick the critical few. Don't pick everything that we know we need to do, but pace yourself and decide, what do we do now? How do we measure moving the needle, and what do we do next?
Now, you said you did that first time that you did that video conference as opposed to the face-to-face. So how was that received?
Well, it was tremendously exciting, actually, because...
how many people were involved in this?
There was two people sitting in Europe, in Paris, mm-hmm. and there was one gentleman sitting in Shanghai on his own. And then there was five of us sitting here in the U.S., so representation from corporate, which is me and my boss, and then the Americas region, who's also in Milton. And so we were having breakfast while Europe was having lunch and Shanghai was having some supper. and that was sort of the flow of how things went.
And so you were all three on screens, or or eight of you?
All of us were on screens. Our room could see the other two rooms, and we could also see ourselves, right. which was unfortunate at 6 a.m. but we could all see each other. The technology made that an incredibly interactive and dynamic conversation. We suffered with no delays, no time delays in terms of the language and the audio. It was really extremely smooth. And we got over the, wow, look at this, we're all in the same room, but not really. And then just fell into a very natural meeting, like, as if we were literally in the same room. And I would encourage anyone that has that technology, and if they don't, then even just think about Skype. You know, right. We can all use Skype. But FaceTime, and I don't mean the app, but the actual FaceTime with people, it just can't underestimate what that means.
So do you think that now you'll be doing that more often since you saw how easy it was?
Since we did that, my boss has actually cancelled all of our HR leadership meetings that are in person. That are on the phone. And they've been replaced by quarterly conference calls on the video.
And do you think that'll roll out to other departments within the company that have this kind of internet, you know, when they're globally?
I think where there's technology, we would look to encourage that. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I think leading the way and modeling is something that we try to do in HR. And I think our leadership team also does really well. So over time, I think yes. And sometimes at some point we're going to run into, give me the technology. and so that becomes a dollar sign. But it's clearly something we need to do more and more of. We've got people leading remote teams all around the globe. And they're very rarely in the same room at the same time. So that's something I used a lot at Newell Rubbermaid in terms of connecting with my team. My team was on three different continents. And so, if you only get to Hong Kong once a year, then that's not enough FaceTime with a direct report. So the video piece had become pretty important in that role there, and I'm going to continue to use it at Exide.
On this technology theme, mobile having any real impact with your workforce at this point?
Well, you're getting a bit technologically advanced for us there, actually, Stan. we definitely have that in mind. As we move forward, it's on our agenda to think about how and what should be available in that format. I think as we build out our leadership development and development programs and frameworks, that's something that's going to be central to thinking about how do we deploy. We're talking a lot certainly about the availability of e-learning in terms of a just-in-time component of that strategy. And I think that as we do that, you know, we do have salespeople out there in the field, that aren't sitting at a desk in Milton able to access. So we need to think about mobile. And we're doing that right now from a sales perspective to support the sales community and looking at some tools there that will allow them to do some just-in-time, self-development. Specifically in the sales world.
I want to look at the flip side of this talent management thing for a moment from the talent. And wonder if you have any counsel you might offer people within any organization, but maybe particularly Exide. What are some things that I can do as talent, maybe even eventually at some point high potential talent, to put myself in position to have an opportunity to take advantage of things that are aligned with my skills and my potential? Or there's some things that I can do to get the most out of what you guys are providing?
Yeah, good question.
It was just good.
Oh, no, I'm sliding. I hit my peak and I'm sliding.
Here you're going.
My philosophy on that is that it is a shared responsibility. You know, your career is your career. And I think if we sit and wait and expect that someone's going to come wrap their arms around me and show me the way, then that's probably a little bit naive. So it's a partnership. You know, we as an organization own having the right programs, the right processes in place to make sure we have the right conversations about our people. And we need to know our people. You know, we can't manage our people if we don't know them. I think from an employee and team members' point of view, I think it's really for each of us to know what are our aspirations. So we should always be thinking about those things. Am I having conversations with my manager about what I aspire to do, how I need and want to develop either in my current role or in a future role? And to have and actively put that conversation on the agenda. And we don't have to wait for our managers to do that. Some of us work for bosses that naturally speak to development, and that's just part of their DNA. And sometimes we have to sort of lead the witness a little bit. So my underlying message is we are responsible for our own careers, and we should be asking questions and finding out the answer to your question, which is how can I position myself to be on the radar for this or to be considered for this? And your manager, really, it's their responsibility as a manager to be able to deal with that question.
But you also want the employee to take the initiative and be proactive.
Totally.
Ultimately, because it's their career, like you said.
Exactly. I absolutely do. And I think that all too often,
the employee's waiting.
We hear stories, you know.
Like, pick me. They're not picking
do
me?
Do more. Right. You know, you read engagement surveys or employee surveys, and there's not enough of this. I look for our managers to encourage employees to proactively take charge of their development.
Right. Well, what's an example maybe in your career that you've done where you took initiative and maybe that opens up some doors for you?
You know, I think that the opportunity to take the chance to come to the U.S. Mm-hmm. and to take a relocation and an expat assignment in an entirely new role in an entirely new country was, you know, this notion that development sometimes comes from a little bit of pain. And if you constantly make a safe choice, then you're probably not going to grow.
Right.
Which, you know, I'm teaching to the choir here or preaching to the choir. So I think that saying, you know what, there's things in that job that are pretty scary. I know I've got the skills necessary. Maybe some of the context is different. The audience is different. The level's different. But I think making the choice to make that change, to take on the learning associated with being in a different culture, because you know the Brits and the Americans, we are different.
Really?
And taking that step. And I think for me, anyway, development comes from stretching and taking that.
So when you had the opportunity, was that something you pushed for, or they chose you to come?
I was approached to come. Uh-huh. And you know, it was a lot of soul searching about. It's a big deal.
Sure.
Putting everything on a ship and sending it across the ocean. I have a husband and no children, so that was easy. Not that my husband's easy, but it was easy without kids. It was a lot of soul searching to decide if that was the right thing to do. And when mm-hmm. we weigh up the whole pros and cons, this was clearly a career opportunity on a lot of levels. And certainly I encourage people to think about a stretch as a way to grow and learn, as opposed to thinking about it as a reason not to.
Right.
So what's next for you and your team? Where do you think you'll be investing the vast majority of your energy over the coming months?
You know, I think we certainly focused on developing the culture at Exide. We call it developing a winning culture. We have a set of core values and competencies that we call the four E's: ethics, energize, engage. And we really want to embed those things into the DNA of the company. So how does that show up in how we attract and hire? How does that show up in how we develop and ultimately reward and retain? So we're really focused on bringing that to life right now in the company. And at the same time, we want to get really clear on understanding the talent. I've mentioned that review process a few times. It's really fundamental and key to a lot of the things that we're going to put in place once we know more about our people.
Right, so you need that baseline information so then
exactly.
you have things to compare to.
Exactly. So, you know, we are on a cultural journey in a tough market. So that's kind of probably where our next 12 months is going to be for sure.
Well, outstanding job with at least two of those, energizing and engaging. It's been an absolute delight having you in the studio.
Likewise.
This morning.
Fantastic. You did a great job, Stone.
You did.
Stone.
I did. Okay.
Lee, well done. Good
I got
job.
Work to do. Work to do.
Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor and our guest this morning, Andrea Lawson, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next week on Learning Insights.